live under Yankee rule and possible depredations from Yankees on the one hand, or gather up what we can of our possessions and leave. Those are the choices that many of these people had before them. They saw it in that stark a term. We do this or we do that. Slaveholders especially feared that the presence of a Union army would hurt them. Their slaves would run away. The army might decide to be harsher on a slaveholding rebel than on a yeoman farmer who happened to live in one of the Confederate states. Many Confederate slaveholders thought that they especially were at risk. Jefferson Davis's older brother, Joseph Davis, believed that. He became a refugee during the war, lost virtually everything, as did Jefferson Davis in terms of their Mississippi holdings. In the course of the war, it became clear that farms and plantations pillaged to the greatest degree were those abandoned by their owners. So in retrospect, most of the people who became refugees probably wouldn't have done it because they would have been able to step back and see, oh, if we had stayed, we might have been able to hang on to some things. But of course, that wasn't apparent in the heat of the moment. They didn't know that those who stayed would do better on balance than those who became refugees. And so many decided to leave. They left in Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, initially, and later they left in Georgia and the Carolinas and Alabama and Mississippi. And as I'm sure is apparent, as you would expect, the phenomenon was tied almost directly to patterns of military movement on the part of the United States forces. Those parts of the Confederacy where the United States forces appeared earliest, that is, in the upper stretches of the Confederacy, Tennessee and Virginia, and along the coastlines, parts of the Carolinas, New Orleans, parts of Louisiana, those are the areas that first experienced large numbers of refugees. Later in the war, when Union military forces penetrated more deeply into the Confederacy, then parts of Alabama and the interior of Mississippi and the interior of Georgia and so forth also experienced considerable numbers of refugees. Now, refugees typically tried to stay as close to home as possible. In other words, they'd make an initial move, hoping that would be enough. Federal armies would move. Then they'd move again. There were often multiple movements on the part of refugees, moving again and again to try to stay ahead of the federal soldiers. Many congregated in cities such as Richmond and Atlanta and Charleston, obvious cities that they believed the Confederacy would defend to the greatest degree possible, cities that seemed to offer refuge from northern incursions. Richmond early on became the principal refugee center. I think I've mentioned before that Richmond had just under 40,000 people as its population on the eve of the war. That ballooned to more than 100,000 in the course of the war, and a significant percentage of that increase came in the form of refugees. Some refugees had ample time to plan their departures. They very carefully would pack things and try to acquire wagons and so forth so they could move as much as possible, take as much of their household apparatus with them as possible, and farm implements and so forth. But others had very little time to get ready to go. An example of the latter category is the Bishop General Leonidas Polk's wife, who had about an hour's notice that she would have to abandon their home in Nashville, Tennessee, in February 1862, right in the wake of the fall of Fort Donelson. She was told she had to go, and off she went. The scene of refugees en route to wherever they were going was often quite memorable. You'd see lines of people streaming along bumpy roads, crammed onto trains, refugees presenting really a quite pitiful sight. One young woman fleeing from Baton Rouge remembered what she described as, quote, a heart-rending scene, women searching for their babies along the road where they had been lost. Others sitting in the dust and crying and wringing their hands. All the talk was of burning homes, of houses knocked to pieces by balls, of famine, murder, and desolation. Now, I think that this woman accurately captured the kind of rumors that would spread. I don't think that actual situation happened in many instances where the Union Army came in and just started to shoot at houses with pieces of artillery and so forth. That would have been highly unusual.